The waves bringing ebooks to publishing shores are coming faster and growing higher. This week, Amazon announces a deal to turn the Kindle into a virtual library, while in a pair of courtrooms, litigants face off over digitization. Welcome, everyone, to a new and very special Friday feature of CCC's podcast series. My name is Chris Keneally. Beginning today, September 23rd, CCC's Beyond the Book will speak with the editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly for an early look at the news that publishers, editors, authors, agents, and librarians will be talking about when they return to work on Monday. Joining me first on the show is Andrew Albanese, PW's feature editor. Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Hi, Chris. Great to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you join us today and looking forward to this continuing relationship. It's a great way to get a little bit of a sneak peek at the news and the issue coming out on Monday. Let's begin with the Amazon OverDrive partnership. It's bound to make library card holders and Kindle owners happy. Tell us what's involved.
Indeed. Well, the big news today was that a long-awaited partnership between ebook vendor OverDrive and Amazon went live that now makes library ebooks lendable on the Kindle and on the Kindle platform, the app, etc. As you know, the Kindle is by far the most popular e-reading platform, yet until today, libraries were unable to lend Kindle editions. So OverDrive, meanwhile, manages almost all ebook lending in the United States, but until now, its lending has been restricted to EPUB devices, the Nook, the iPad, the Sony Reader, for example. But even with those restrictions, library lending has boomed over the last 2 years, and circulation is up, according to OverDrive, by over 200%. And more libraries are moving more money into their digital collections to meet that demand as e-readers continue to grow and e-reader prices drop. So I'll leave it to you to surmise what adding the most popular device by a mile and the most popular platform will do for demand for library ebooks.
It's probably going to add quite a lot of interest in all of this, and but the timing here is especially interesting, right? There was a meeting in New York.
Yeah, you can't account for timing. Last week, the ALA officials and AAP officials had a get to know you luncheon in New York City. That then they had a serendipitous meeting with some of the major publishers' library representatives. And at that meeting, I'm sure that the issue of ebooks in libraries came up. And also this week, in another great piece of timing, Publishers Weekly launched a dedicated library landing page on our website, and we welcomed Peter Brantley as a contributing editor to talk about library issues for us.
Well, I was very excited by that. We've had Peter Brantley on our program. He's a terrifically smart guy who really cares about books and libraries and the needs of people, and authors, I should say, and all of their needs in this new digital world. And you mentioned the potential for some tension there between the ebook platforms and the publishers. Tell us a bit about what's the issue there.
Yeah, you know, as our readers are surely aware, ebooks are becoming a complex, thorny issue for libraries. For one, libraries don't buy and lend ebooks like they do traditional books. They license access to ebooks. And that represents a critical shift in the very nature of libraries. It can inhibit their ability to assemble and curate collections, for example. You know, publishers, meanwhile, are worried that easy access to free library books is going to bite into their sales. And it's a legitimate fear. You know, when you had the inconvenience of having to check out and lug around physical print library books, and that's now replaced by the ability to just hit a button and have it delivered right to your laptop, you could see where, you know, publishers would be concerned about what that will mean for sales. You know, these are very complex issues. And to that end, we're happy to have Peter Brantley, who is, you know, the head of the Book Server Project at the Internet Archive and the founder of the Read 2.0 list at PW to talk about these issues. And his first contribution was an excellent editorial about this very subject called Defining Library, which is up on the PW pages now.
Well, we'll be sure to check that out. And what I actually appreciate about Peter is his good sense of humor and his real sort of fair-handedness when it comes to all these issues. So we will look forward to reading him there in his blog. But, you know, sometimes these disputes do end up in courtrooms, and we've got some update there on a couple of important cases in publishing. Tell us about those.
You know, it's interesting that the UN is in town this week because the state of relations between publishers and libraries and, of course, Google makes that body look downright functional. personal. So yeah, last week the Google settlement parties were put on a trial schedule over this long-running Google scam plan, but it's starting to look very likely that publishers are going to cut their own deal soon and leave the Authors Guild and Google to do things out there. The Authors Guild, meanwhile, doubled down last week by filing suit against libraries over a scanning and preservation plan or collaborative known as the HathiTrust. And frankly, that suit is surprised me, and it's baffling a lot of experts. But for publishers, you can see that they're just sort of eager to get on with their business, hence the pursuit of a separate deal with Google. The Authors Guild, meanwhile, seems to have turned this into a fight over principle. And I'm just a little surprised that we're preparing to go to another Frankfurt Book Fair with this issue still unresolved.
Yeah, it is remarkable. It's gone on now since 2005, as the original suits were filed, and 2008 when the settlement itself was announced as proposed. And as you say, Frankfurt looms. We're entering the first real weekend of fall. There's a crispness in the air, and everybody in publishing is out there looking for a new pair of comfy shoes, I think, to get around Frankfurt.
Absolutely. And Monday is our Frankfurt preview issue. That issue will include my colleague Rachel Diehl's annual Frankfurt briefcase, in which she outlines some of the titles and authors that agents will be shopping at this year's fair. And in another piece, I take a look at the changing Frankfurt Book Fair, which has really embraced the digital world with great gusto. You know, it's created an online Frankfurt Academy that's addressing some key issues for the industry. And it's really sort of underscoring both the importance of the fair, of being there and meeting face to face, but at the same time, it's turning Frankfurt into a year-round digital space. So we're looking forward to a high-energy fair this year, even though the economy's been bad.
Well, there's a lot more in PW this week. There's a story from Rachel that you're especially fond of.
Yeah, my personal favorite piece coming next week is a story from Rachel about the sales approach that Foundry and agent Peter McGuigan have taken to selling Patrick DeWitt's novel, The Sisters Brothers. DeWitt lives in the Pacific Northwest, but he's Canadian, and he's in the excellent but unusual position of being up for both a Giller Prize in Canada and a Booker in the UK. And the Giller Prize nomination, it seems, was helped along by the fact that he was published separately in Canada this time. His first book did not have a standalone Canadian publisher. So Rachel's piece is a really fascinating look at the marketing, the rights, and the politics of book prizes.
And a story that probably could only have been written in 2011. Things have changed so much over the last few years. Well, I want to welcome now Rose Fox, who is PW's review editor and who blogs at Genreville on the PW site. Rose, welcome to Beyond the Book.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
And you come with a bag full of books to tell us about.
I sure do. I'm going to give you a quick preview of everything that's coming up in Monday's issue in the reviews section. In fiction, we have a rave review of Naomi Ben-Aaron's debut, Running the Rift, which won the Bellwether Prize for Manuscripts. She writes about genocide in Rwanda as seen through the eyes of a talented Tutsi runner who dreams of representing the war-torn country in the Olympics. In mysteries and thrillers, there's a terrific Q&A with C.C. Benison discussing his new Christmas-themed cozy mystery series. We also review an outstanding posthumous collection of John Mortimer's Forever Rumple stories. The science fiction fantasy horror section features two post-apocalyptic novels, Susan Jane Bigelow's Broken, a brutal deconstruction of the superhero story, and Rob Ziegler's Seed, which contrasts advances in biotechnology with societal decay. In romance, historicals are big. Sabrina Jeffries' To Wed a Wild Lord is a high-tension tale of death, guilt, and love in Regency London. And Joanna Bourne's The Black Hawk, a French and English spy romance set just after the French Revolution, follows in the footsteps of The Forbidden Rose, which was one of our picks for the best books of 2010. Our comics review section covers a collection of Marti's The Cabbie strips from the 1980s and Jennifer Hayden's cheerful, homey memoir, Underwire. In nonfiction, there are Q&As with Robert K. Massey, biographer of Peter the Great and Catherine the Great, and Ellen DeGeneres, who explains how humor helps her get through hard times. Side-by-side reviews of Wendy Kaplan's California Design and Rebecca Peabody's Pacific Standard Time discuss their approaches to chronicling California design and art. We also review Deborah Scroggins' Wanted Women, which contrasts the lives and politics of two Muslim women, and Tony Jute and Timothy Snyder's lively retrospective, Thinking the 20th Century. Online, we cover Richard Dawkins's The Magic of Reality and Neil and Constance McCabe's The Big Show, Charles M. Conlon's Golden Age Baseball Photographs. And finally, in audiobooks, we note standout productions of Charles Webb's The Graduate, which is best known as the source for the movie of the same title, Tom Parada's darkly comic post-rapture novel, The Leftovers, and Dashiell Hammett's classic Red Harvest.
Well, there's a lot there, certainly, to find some interest in. Rose Fox, PW's Reviews Editor, thank you very much for that rundown of the books being reviewed in this week's PW.
You're very welcome.
And Andrew Albanese, I enjoyed chatting with you about Kindle and Amazon and all the other issues in this coming Publishers Weekly. Andrew, thanks for joining us again.
Happy to be here and look forward to next week.
Indeed, we look forward to having this series with Publishers Weekly. As we said at the outset, we're going to be speaking every Friday in a special new feature with editors and reporters of Publishers Weekly, the leading publication serving all involved in the creation, production, marketing, and sale of the written word in all formats. We hope it'll give you a nice early look at the news that everyone will be talking about when you get back to work on Monday. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, like Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, copyright.com/Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Chris Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening.